This podcast is offered by Wildflowers and Sangha. A Dharma Talk by Roshi Amy to SLR Hollowell.
So, this is our last full day of retreat. A lot of things have happened. At the same time, it's just been sitting with whatever is. So nothing extraordinary has happened. Strong spine has been just sitting, and everything that we have put through to weave that has arisen in our lives during this week is the soft face. Yesterday, I made the unfortunate or fortunate decision to have us chant the Heart Sutra, therefore raising the question of what is the Heart Sutra, and being asked to answer that question in 5 minutes, five sentences, very briefly, and I was not satisfied with that answer. At the moment, I don't remember what I said, but I was not satisfied with it. And so I've sat with it since then, looking into it. And what's really marvelous is that my intention was not to have this week be about the Heart Sutra, but because the Heart Sutra is the heart of our practice, the essence of our practice, this week was entirely about the Heart Sutra. And it became the Heart Sutra formally entered a retreat yesterday, but it's been with us throughout the retreat, and we've been with it. There was the question of emptiness that came up, because sutra is basically divided into two. The first part is about what is wisdom, what is prajna. And the second part is about the functioning of prajna, how the bodhisattva functions, acts from this. And this is what we call compassion. So, and when we talk about prajna, wisdom, we talk about emptiness, because we say wisdom is to realize emptiness. So, why am I talking about emptiness? Yesterday I was not satisfied with the explanation I gave of that, because it can quickly become conceptual. And I remembered a story from my own practice with my teacher in an interview when I was young. Young in the practice and young in age. And I don't remember what the conversation, what the koan was, whatever it was, but the subject was emptiness. And my teacher was talking about it. I had the impression she thought I knew what emptiness was. And I didn't. And so I finally said, or maybe I said several times, but at one point I said, Roshi, you know, I'm really sorry, but I don't know what, she wasn't Roshi at the time, so Sensei, I'm really sorry, but I don't know what emptiness is. And I felt terrible. I felt like I was disappointing her, like she thought that I was somewhere where I wasn't. No, but I was being honest, and I really didn't know. And she said, oh, yes, you do. You know what emptiness is. And I said, no, I don't. And back and forth. And she said, well, you know that story you told me? And she, about some experience you had. I don't remember what it was, but I said, yeah, I remember that story. But what I experienced in that story was fullness. It was not emptiness, I said to her. And she looked at me and smiled. And I realized at that moment that what I was calling fullness is what we refer to as emptiness. This word emptiness, we have so many ideas about it. We think that it means there's nothing. And we can't understand that because our ideas and concepts of nothing are so, you know, we would not say this glass is empty, you know? We could not because there's something in it, right? But when we refer to emptiness, I say we're referring to fullness. It's because it's empty, the glass of water is empty of the ideas and the concepts about a glass of water. It's completely full of just what it is. Just this. Nothing added, nothing taken away. Just this. And it's when we experience that, it's a direct experience that is beyond names, concepts, labels, functions, ideas. It's just what it is. It's so full. Everything's full. And I'm sitting here in my garden, and the garden is just full. Of course, it's high summer. And so all the flowers are just like crazy. And the grass is burnt from the heat and lack of rain. And some of the plants are dying of thirst. Others are have no problem with that, not having water. Some of the flowers are wilting, and it's my job to cut them, I'm told, from my husband because he's not here. But it's all full. It's just full of what it is. The flowers that are wilting are not bad, and the flowers that are blooming are not good. The burnt grass is neither good nor bad. It's just what it is. Now, to realize this, as we say, this is to realize emptiness. It's to empty things of their of our ideas about them. In mostly importantly, ourself. So it means to awaken to our true nature, to who we truly are. It means to see the emptiness, to see the fullness, to fully appreciate me just as I am, neither good nor bad. And realize that nothing is missing. When we talk about fullness or emptiness, it means nothing is outside. The Tibetans use the word, and even the Chinese originally used the word for sky when they talked about emptiness, the sky. You know, we look at the sky and there's nothing in the sky. Even a cloud, we know, is not really in the sky. It's this formation of particles, vapors that is moving, you know? And you know in an airplane, if you've ever done this, you go through the cloud and there's nothing, you know? There might be some turbulence because it's a reaction to these phenomena, but there's nothing. So the Tibetans and the Chinese used this word, sky. Actually, the Tibetans, I think, have, I don't know how many different words, vast array of words for snow, because it's so much a part of who and what they are. that they have a different appreciation for it than the rest of us who, in Paris, we don't see snow very often. In the Alps, we see snow in the winter, we hope, although the climate is changing. So I heard yesterday that they're evacuating people in parts of Italy because they're fearing that the glacier on Mont Blanc is melting and could cause flooding and landslides. Any word we have for what we're talking about is just a word and is not it. When we truly experience whatever it is we're talking about, as it is, we're experiencing the emptiness of it, of all things. So the Heart Sutra is about that. It's about Rajna wisdom, which we call as experiencing the wisdom of emptiness, and then the function of that. So we could say it's the wisdom of fullness. And when Bernie Glassman, you know, I told you about the weaving metaphor that he used. So when I went back and looked at his pages in his book about the Heart Sutra, he mentions the two aspects of of reality. We also talk about the precepts in these terms. We talk about Buddhas in these terms, the intrinsic and the experiential. So the intrinsic nature of all of us is awakened. We're enlightened. We are intrinsically. But experientially, we don't know that. We don't have that experience. That's why we say everyone is a Buddha, because intrinsically you're awakened. But experientially you're not. So that's why someone with a capital B is a Buddha, because they've realized that. And someone with a small B is a Buddha intrinsically, but not experientially. That's why there's an importance of experiencing. So we can read books about this. We can read books about anything and understand it conceptually. But that's not the same thing as experiencing it. You know, you can read cookbooks. But until you've actually prepared the recipe and tasted it and eaten it, it's just words on a piece of paper. You can read about car mechanics, gardening, psychoanalysis, history, theory, literary theory, I don't know, whatever. But until you experience it, it's not the same thing. It's just conceptual. And with awakening, with experiencing emptiness, is very different than hearing words about it. That's why it's so unsatisfactory to me to sit here and talk about emptiness, because what I'm talking about is not at all what it is. And yet, it's important to say something. It's important to give words. Had my teacher not had that discussion with me and pointed me to that experience that I had told her about, at that moment, I would not have realized fullness and emptiness is the same thing. So, the Heart Sutra is about this. It's the heart of our practice. It points us to the heart of our practice, which is just to be fully, totally present in this moment, at any moment, moment to moment. And that's what realizing emptiness is about. Because when we realize that, then we don't need to project to another moment. We don't need to hang on to a past moment. We see the fullness of this moment as it is and can appreciate it and know how to act. So, you know, eliminates pain. As we talked about yesterday, the pain is still there. I have a headache. It's still there. But when you realize the emptiness of it, when it's just what it is, we know how to be with it in a different way. We know not to add pain onto it. We know it's just what it is. We can be present with it. We can take something, an aspirin, paracetamol, whatever you take. We know how to be with it and how to take care of it, let's say. There's the famous story from one of the Buddhist canons of someone who was shot with an arrow. And someone comes to help. And the person who has been shot says to the person who's helping, "Tell me what kind of feathers they are in the arrow so that I know who shot the arrow. Or tell me what kind of wood it's made of so I can know who shot it or where it came from." But actually, the only thing that needs to be done is removing the arrow. And in the sutra, or I think it's the Buddha who comments, the person will die from the arrow if they're spending all their time worrying about the feathers and the wood. All that needs to be done is the arrow needs to be removed and the wound needs to be cared for. It is what it is. Now, we've heard the President of the United States say this over and over again about the death toll, the COVID. And I hear him say that, and he's not coming from a place of emptiness when he's saying that. He's coming from the opposite. He's coming from the delusion of trying to go away from the problem instead of. So you can say it is what it is. From a deluded point of view, from a shrugging your shoulders and turning away from it. Or you can say it is what it is and act on it. Everything is in the action. Everything is how you manifest your realization. So when I went to, when I went back at Bernie's pages, I came across this really interesting way that he presents it's nothing new, but he just has a way of presenting it in a very clear way of, you know, in this Heart Sutra, it says the emptiness of the five conditions or the five aggregates or something. I forget what the word is exactly in the Heart Sutra. But let's say the five conditions. And so we have the, let me just look at how he translates those. Emptiness of all five conditions. So, so form, first is one condition, sensation, perception, reaction, and consciousness. I'm not sure in the translation we used yesterday if those were the exact words, but it doesn't matter. we're always talking about the same things, the five conditions. So we say that, you know, is bodhisattva, he's deeply, deeply practicing his, he awakens to the prajna. And he's, when he awakens to that, he sees the emptiness of all things, and he sees, importantly, the emptiness of these five conditions. So, and then the sutra goes on about, you know, no I, no you, no knows, and all this stuff. But so if we look at the five conditions, and with each condition there's a passion that is tied to it. And this really speaks to us in our lives, okay, these passions, because this is the world we live in, the world of these passions. That's what makes us, that's part of who we are as human beings. If we didn't have these passions, we wouldn't be human. The question is, what do we do with them? You know, it's like everything is in the action, what we do. And that's how this ties into this week, because all of these passions are present for us during our week in all of our activities. But how do we then, how do we approach them? What do we do about that? How do we act in all these various beautiful different aspects of our life? So, first condition, form. And so Bernie points out that the passion attached to that is, or related to that, is ignorance. We don't see that we are one body. We see only separation. He gives this great example of our two hands. So one hand is Sam and the other hand is Joe. And someone gives money and Sam takes it. And because Joe doesn't see that Sam and Joe are one body, he becomes upset. Okay, so that's just the first aspect. The two hands are one body, but when they don't see that, then all the trouble starts, right? So the second condition is sensation. So Joe, who doesn't see that he and Sam are one, part of one body, has pride, because he's attached to Joe being better than Sam. Pride is the emotion, the passion tied to sensation. And then, because he's perceiving this, he's perceiving that he's better than Sam, desire arises. This is the passion associated with perception. So, desire. He wants that money. He wants what Sam has, Joe. Even though they're one body, right? For us, this seems absurd, but in our daily lives, it doesn't, because this is where we live, right? And then the reaction that comes from that, this is the next condition, jealousy. Jealousy is the passion associated with reaction. So Joe is super jealous. Has this desire. Proud, he's me. He's identified with Joe. And doesn't see that he and Sam are one. And so is jealous. Jealous of Sam because Sam has what he wants. And the next, fifth condition is consciousness. The passion associated with that is anger. And so from this jealousy, Joe will attack Sam, become angry with Sam, attack Sam, and try to get the money. Take from Sam what he thinks is his, or accuse Sam, or be angry with Sam, or hate saying, however you want to interpret anger. Now, so what do we do then? If we can realize the first, very first basic, the basic awareness, the basic wisdom of non-separation, of one body, none of that would have happened. Sam is Sam, Joel is Joe, the right hand is the right hand, the left hand is the left hand. Sam would not have, by taking the money, Sam would not have offended Joe. Joe may have rejoiced in the fact that Sam had money, received money, rejoiced in the fact that because they're one body, they are both benefiting from it. But it all stems from that basic ignorance, that basic delusion, we call it, of separation, of not seeing the oneness of life. And that's what this Heart Sutra is about. And that's what our whole week has been about, is seeing the oneness. So appreciating when you're sitting in front of your computer screen, appreciating when you're bored, appreciating when you want to turn off the video so you can do something else and no one will know. Appreciating all of the people in their unlimited manifestations, each in their own place, one not better than the other. And therefore supporting each other with love and affection, because we recognize the differences. We recognize the oneness, and we can, because we recognize the oneness, we can appreciate the differences. And therefore, instead of being jealous, we become supportive and loving. And we can appreciate things just as they are. You know, you've heard over and over my stories, but an important story for me of that was appreciating rain, because I didn't used to like rain because it made my hair frizzy. I had long straight hair, and when it rained, it became like this, and I hated it. I hated it principally because I had this idea that I looked better when my hair was not like that. You know, I had a boyfriend who told me he liked my long straight hair, and so I became very identified with that. Or, you know, fashion was long straight hair. I don't, you know, whatever. I had this identity that I was attached to. So when it rained or it was humid, my hair didn't look like that anymore, and I became so upset. Ruined my day. And then I became really mean to other people, because I was not happy myself, and so I was annoyed with everyone else too. And it ruined my activities, whatever I was doing. In French, we would say, ça m'a pourri la vie. You know, it ruined my life. This damn rain, you know. And at one moment, you know, I had an experience of, it's just rain. And the plants, the grass, the little slugs on the blade of grass was loving the rain. And the rain was neither good nor bad. My hair being frizzy was neither good nor bad. It was just what it was. Changed my life, that experience. And changed the life of people around me, because I was no longer such a jerk when it was raining. So we can appreciate things just as they are. It's really hot here in Paris, and it's going to be even hotter later today and tomorrow. It's not necessarily pleasant to be in the city when it's hot, but it's just what it is. It's okay, you know? I function accordingly then. I sleep in the coolest room. I drink a lot of water in the afternoon. I've learned this from the Portuguese, that when it's hot, I close the shutters. Well, because I never lived in such a hot climate, but in Portugal in the summer, I've learned that you have to do that. You close the shutters so that the heat does not come in and you can keep the coolness in. I just respond to the situation as it is without adding all of my judgments to it. So all week, this is what our practice has been about. In a formal retreat situation, it's different. We don't have as many different things arising. We're basically in the same rooms all the time with the same people who are doing the same thing as us. And we don't have to think about much of anything else. We do, of course, think about all kinds of other things. But there's not a lot of other stuff interfering. This has been a special challenge this week because we have moved from room to room. We have moved from groups of people to other groups of people, to individuals, to other activities, to when the guy comes to read the gas meter, I open the door and let him in the middle of something else, you know, talking to my son, making lunch, watering the garden, everything that I need to do. But if we come to this from an experience of oneness, of the emptiness and the fullness of it all, then we can appreciate each of those different activities as just all practice. It's just another manifestation of things as they are, of just this. That's the heart of our practice. Realizing that, deepening that experience, all of the structures and the practices we put in place, everything we talk about, that's what it is. We're pointing towards that. Just being fully here now with what is. And the Heart Sutra is the points to that. And it's the heart of our practice. I didn't intend to talk about the Heart Sutra this week, as I said, but that too is a pure manifestation of things as they are. That when I let the things be, and I'm talking about myself, right, in terms of what to say to you this week, when I just let things be, this term, Joa brought this term up the other day, organically, it becomes clear. I just speak and I trust that what arises is it. And whatever we do this week, I trust whatever arises is it. I put in place the spine, and then I let emerge the softness, whatever it is. Now, if if you're here and you practice with me and this Sangha, you're familiar with that already, because that's what we do. We are wild. We work with whatever ingredients we have. You know, it's bring it on. As we say in American English, bring it on. Let arise what will arise. it's a difficult practice. No one ever said it would be easy. It's actually the best practice, the greatest practice. You know, we say that the Buddha way is unsurpassable. Not because it's better in terms of relative terms than another practice, but that there's nothing other than that. There's nothing beyond it. It can't be surpassed because it's everything. Your life is it, just as it is. And as we, this is what this retreat is about. So I've talked much more than I usually do in these talks. I'm very grateful for you all being here and joining, and your devotion and your determination and your dedication, supporting each other, even with whatever, any difficulties, whatever has arisen for you, you've still been here, you've come, you show up, because that's the most important thing, is to just show up. And yeah. So we have a few minutes. If anyone would like to say something, questions, comments, whatever. Yeah, questionnaire.
The first time we sang together the Heart Sutra here, I didn't know the Heart Sutra. It was the first time I was hearing these words together. And then eventually some other time someone asked, what did we thought about it? What did we thought it meant? And how we felt about it? And after something I said, like, I don't understand all the words or the meaning of it, but I know what I felt, the frequency or the vibration of the words. And in the end, I finished with this sentence. I felt all the space inside and outside of me. And they're both the same thing. But right, I didn't rationalize about it. I didn't really thought about what I was saying. I don't know what I was saying. The words just came out like this. But somehow they meant something to me. They made sense. And after that, saying that, I started feeling doubt in my head about what I was saying. What did you say, Sara? That doesn't make any sense. That was so stupid. And I sat on it and I meditated on it. And I was like, those words together, maybe they don't even mean anything. What was that? And I've been having that doubt since then. But now hearing you, they made sense again a little bit. But now I have doubt again. yes.
Well, thank you very much for that. That is a really beautiful illustration of how this works. Because what Sarah realized and said, without, she didn't know what she was saying, that's it. She realized what the sutra is saying in that moment. And she said it, but she didn't know what she was saying. And then very quickly, I don't know how quickly, but the concepts, the ideas, the judgments, it all comes back. And she starts doubting it, even though when it, she realized it, when she had that experience and said it, it was there, it was real, it was true. And she then judges it, and it's lost, lost. And this is a perfect illustration of how what happens to us. We have a direct experience of absolute reality, as they are, and very quickly we start putting a label on it, we start judging it, we start doubting it, we don't trust it. And this practice is about developing, deepening that trust and that confidence. So I hope, Sarah, that you will trust that and remember what that felt like. And remember that, not to hang on to it, but remember it so that you will know it, you'll recognize it when it happens again. Because it will. It will happen again. Especially if you don't hang on to it and make it into some, you know, amazing thing that happened. Because it is amazing, but it's not amazing. In that moment when it happened, it wasn't amazing. It was just what it was, and you said what came to you, and then after you were thinking, whoa, what did I say? That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. Wonderfully, it doesn't make any sense. Because when we start making sense, then we start getting into concepts and separations and ideas and fixing things. And there's a moment for that. We need to function in the world with that. But we, by focusing only on that, we miss this other aspect that we experience. And we all have that possibility. Delphine's raising her hand.
Yeah? Yeah, I was thinking, isn't it the best illustration of course you know what is emptiness?
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Of course you do. We all do. We all do. It's a surprise when you do. You say, oh, wow, you know. At the same time, it's, yes, of course. Of course it's what it is. So Roshi said that to me. Of course it is. I said it to myself, too. Of course I do. Again. So, beautiful illustration. Thank you. Pedro. Oh, you can't hear. You can't hear.
Okay. Earlier this week, you talked about pain and about suffering. And now that you were talking about emptiness or fullness, it came to my mind that the emptiness is what allows us to see the difference between pain and suffering. When we have no emptiness, we have pain and suffering. When we find emptiness, we can get rid of the suffering, and then it's okay to have pain, if I can say so.
Yeah, exactly.
I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Yeah, and the same goes for any other affliction that we have, you know. We can, when we realize the emptiness of jealousy, then we can, then we're not attached to it, and we can just see it for what it is, and appreciate, be happy for what the other person has that we don't have. Or we may not even feel jealous anymore. It's that fundamental awakening to emptiness that changes the body. Absolutely. Pedro, once again.
I just wanted to share that whenever I share something and I get a reaction, just like I got now, I step back. All right, I got it. And here it comes again. And I try not to hope that I got it thing, because if I do, I don't get it. So just wanted to share that.
So when you say you have this reaction, I got it, it means that you're proud of yourself because you got it, you feel good or something? Or what do you mean by I got it?
I mean, like, I feel like somehow my ego arises. And because he said yes and you agreed to my thoughts, that's the I got it. It's, okay, I know it. And if I know it, I hold on to I know it. And then it's like you were saying to Sarah, that moment was magic in itself when it happened, but don't hold on to that because it will become an agenda and then you won't have emptiness. It will be a concept and it will chase you.
Exactly. That's the process, exactly.
I got it.
And you got it. You got it. And so, you know, you can then, instead of hanging on to that experience of I got it, you can learn then to trust that, oh yeah, okay, I got it, and okay, I can let go of that and see what else arises. And have trust in when you experience. Sometimes it's not always I got it, you know. Sometimes it's I don't get it at all, you know. Or sometimes the teacher doesn't say yes. Sometimes the teacher says, you know, I think you should look at that. Well, our time is up here. Thank you. I hope my internet connection was stable. It kept telling me it wasn't, but... it is what it is, right? And we will see each other this afternoon, later. Bon appetit if you're having lunch soon. Thank you.